Do you remember that feeling of your first critical hit? Or are you one of those people who are getting ready to start that journey? Well, I have a show for you. It's called Girls Who Don't D&D, because none of this all-female team of players has ever joined a D&D game before, or any other role-playing game. They go from learning which dice is what to challenging the gods themselves. They're surrounded by a beautiful, chaotic environment that's been described as a cross between Terry Pratchett's Discworld and Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and it's a world you can be part of too. That's because their listeners perform pre-recorded sections that fit into each show. Those parts and the rest of the show sound amazing, with carefully added music and effects that bring a touch of the cinematic to your experience. It's kind of cool how they're complete amateurs when they started and they really progress. I think you can probably, you know, we can relate to that with Tales from the Stinky Dragon, starting off kind of as newbies and then really learning the game as we go. I think that's a great way to approach it. And you can join this group of unassuming Australians, otherwise known as the Girls Who Don't D&D, on any device that lets you stream podcasts. But I'm warning you, this one's addictive, heartwarming, heartbreaking, and very, very funny. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special edition of Tales from the Stinky Dragon, Betwixt the Tales, as Blaine likes to call it. We just wrapped up Arc 3 of Tales from the Stinky Dragon, and we have a little recap. So before we start the next arc, we want to have a little intermission, a little pause where we recap the story so far, and we give our hardy adventurers an opportunity to level up. It's been a little while since you all leveled up.
You calling us fat?
Hardy. Rotund.
Rotund.
Robust.
Hey, that's accurate for Bart, baby.
a stout little boy.
Mm-hmm. But full of charm.
So when was the last time you guys did actually level up?
Oh my God.
Well,
15 years ago.
After we saved Sleek, or went out with Sleek, or fought Sleek.
after we went on a date with Sleek.
Whatever we did with Sleek.
So I think these are great opportunities for people who maybe haven't listened to the entire show so far to get caught up. You know, we'll do a story recap. That way, you know everything that's happened so far, and you can hopefully just jump right into the next arc and have fun with us.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of Sleek, we have one of our producers, or actually both of our producers, and one of them who voices Sleek. How did I butchered the introduction of that? Anyways, Ben and Mike are here.
Whoa. Whee!
Flawless.
The people who make the show good.
Yep. Yeah. So normally during the show, if you ever hear me muttering to myself or saying that I'm talking to another DM, it's either Ben or Micah. Micah does the absolute bulk of the writing for the show, and both of them are there when we typically tape and help me answer the weird little questions that the party comes up with, and all the rule breaking. We deal with all the rule breaking that Chris tries to get away with.
Yeah. We're the people that sweat in the background.
They're the people who are constantly typing in chat, just open the doors.
No. What's been like the most frustrating thing of like the past couple arcs that we've done that you guys have been like just fuming behind the scenes about?
I still to this day, I think it's the just trying to open the door to the clock tower or the Glockentower. Like it's, yeah. It was.
Oh, I turned into a spider, climbed up. And then got everybody up that way.
And wasn't it just open? Like, what? Couldn't we have just like gone through it?
It could have taken just 5 minutes. Just 5 minutes. Just walk through a door.
Yeah.
Wrong.
It's fine. I just spent days and days writing stuff, but it's cool.
Just give us a door.
I thought there was a version of that where like we were all trying to figure out how to do it. And partway through, I thought I'd figured it out. I was like, oh, I could just use the door. And I thought I'd outwitted everyone. But then the door ended up being locked. So I'm still unclear with how that was supposed to go down. But I don't know.
Says the guy who loves to break down doors. The door was locked and I didn't know what to do.
We were supposed to go through the doors.
Oh, okay. We could've...
And don't you also have thieves' tools?
Yeah, I do. Fun story. That I'm pointing at an attic door that's behind me that's connected to my office. I got locked out of that and I actually bought thieves tools and I was able to get myself in there. So like,
wow.
Did they cost 2 silver?
No, they were like, it was a gift from my girlfriend's mom. It's really weird explaining to her why I wanted that gift. But anyways, I'm a lock picker now. I can pick locks.
Everyone's got a side hustle.
Blaine Gibson, lock picker. Could have gone with locksmith. No, lock picker.
Lock picker.
Well, we're talking about some of the things that we've encountered in the past episode. So I think that's a good time to segue to our story recap. And we can go over the story thus far before we get into leveling you guys up. So the story started so long ago when the four of you answered an advertisement looking for interns for the Infinites. The four of you, of course, being Kyborg, the Arcane Archer, Bart the Bard, Mud the Druid, and Gum Gum the Barbarian Wizard, question mark?
Wrong. No, wrong. You called Blaine something he's not.
Yeah, I'm a fighter.
He's a fighter.
He's a fighter, but he's also...
I know, but you called me a druid. You called me my base class, and you called Bart, his base class, a bard.
Yeah, stupid.
What kind of dungeon master are you?
I feel like this is somewhat aggressive.
He's a fighter. He's a aggressive. Don't let him call himself an archer, because he's not. He's a fighter.
But he is an arcane archer.
Guess it's fine. We'll just get him in the next arc. They don't know what's coming. Win the battle, you know, lose the war.
Fine. Kyborg the fighter.
Actually, that you got that backwards. It's like lose the battle, win the war is what you're trying to do.
No, you win the battle today.
He turned it around, little mental judo on you. All right, fine. Kyborg the fighter.
Thank you.
Bart the bard, Mud the druid, and Gum Gum the barbarian / wizard question mark.
Wizbarian.
The Wizbarian.
The Wizbarian.
Yeah, Wizbarian. That's a cool class.
It sounds like a Captain Crunch flavor.
Sounds like a candy. sounds like something you feed children.
You all arrived at the mining town of Boulderay to answer the call to be Infinite interns. The Infinites, of course, are well-known adventurers in this land who needed interns, and you guys showed up. You immediately met Brink Tussler, who's one of Kyborg's best friends, who was a wisecracking warlock. You got into a little tussle with Tussler, and he bested you.
Fake news.
And then you proceeded. The look on Blaine's face as I say that. You were offered the job to be interns for the Infinites, who were a group of mighty adventurers known far and wide for their feats of heroism. However, the public did not know that they had gone missing and they were kidnapped by the mysterious Paralyte. You rescued the Infinites gadgeteer, Dr. from one of his own inventions, and you were put to the test and guided by Sordo, the living sphere, who helped you train in order to help you find the four Infinites. Aleve the Amender, Sleek the Symphonious, Spectral the Surreptitious, and Grizzly the Groundbreaker.
Oh, we haven't met Grizzly yet, have we?
No.
We have not.
Almost like you've been through three arcs and there's four Infinites.
Hold on.
What?
I just figured out something. Our storyline is just Ash Ketchum. We found Dr. Ahem, which is our Professor Oak, and he is sending us out into the world to catch the Pokemon that have been stolen by Team Rocket.
Ooh.
I like to believe it's actually Wizard of Oz.
Well, along the way, we even found our rival, Gary, Brink Tussler. And we're making our way through magical lands trying to find and collect these magical Pokemon. Some are great. Some are terrible. And when we collect them all, we'll be the best that ever was.
Gus is historically a huge Pokemon fan.
Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You know me and Pokemon. Can't get enough.
This is literally the cartoon.
No, it's gotta catch them all. That's the phrase.
I think it's Wizard of Oz, where all four of us, where it's the Tin Man, the Lion, Dorothy, and who's this?
Scarecrow.
Scarecrow. And we're looking for the missing pieces of ourselves.
Oh.
Toto is Sordo, I guess. That rhymes. Let's see, who else?
Which of you is which?
I don't know.
Wait, the which or which of you is which?
I feel like I'm the Tin Man because of the arm and I don't have a heart.
Yeah, Kyborg's probably Tin Man. I would say probably Mud would be the Lion because animal.
That's the reason. He's not scared.
He's an animal.
Gum Gum is without brain, so he would be Scarecrow.
Scarecrow.
Oh, yeah.
That makes Bart Dorothy.
And Bart's Dorothy?
Bart's Dorothy.
We need to get you some ruby slippers.
You can see the resemblance.
Does that make Brink Tussler like the witch, the beginning that dies?
Maybe.
It could be, yeah. The Wicked Witch of the East.
Does this mean that Gum Gum's going to randomly show up at some point with just a gun? A revolver.
Does that happen?
When does that happen in Wizard of Oz?
What is the reference?
The Scarecrow has a revolver in what? Wizard of Oz. He pulls out a gun when they're scared in the forest. And they're like, they're looking around. He just, for some reason, they gave him a gun. Google it right now.
That can't be true.
And you will see him holding this very prop looking.
Yo, what the hell?
Silver pistol. He's like, why?
Scarecrow's got a gun.
Oh my God. He's got a gun. Where did he get that from?
That makes sense. That makes sense. He doesn't have a brain.
How did I never notice this before?
Wow.
This is like Mandela effect.
It really is. This is news to me. And also, like, story-wise, how does that make sense? There's got to be some sort of behind-the-scenes thing.
That means that there are guns in Oz.
Well, I mean, they have machines.
They got machine guns.
Apparently. Do you think the Tin Man was related to that gun?
No, he was attracted to that gun.
Yeah.
Oh, whoa. No, it's like my brother got melted down to make that gun.
Yeah.
Well, now I can't wait 3 arcs from now when we have a t-shirt and it's all of the Infinite interns drawn as Wizard of Oz characters, but Gum Gum's holding a gun.
Yeah.
Gun, gun.
Yep, exactly.
I do want to point out that I was the Tin Man in Curtis Middle School production of Wizard of Oz.
Of course you were.
Thank you. I'm bowing.
Bravo. Squeak, 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 squeak.
Acting.
Acting. Started at a young age.
So you guys, you embarked on your first mission. You were sent to the small desert town of Pious Pass to pick up a package for Dr. But when you arrived, you found yourselves tasked with helping rescue the town cleric Mother Abby from jail after she was blamed for a mysterious curse that was spreading through the town, slowly killing the residents. You received a barber shop quartet haircut, broke into a pawn shop, performed a zombie jailbreak, and eventually you chased down the sheriff to reveal Mother Abby's true identity as Aleve the Amender, who was a brainwashed Infinite turned evil who was slowly poisoning the town. Just as the interns were about to stop a leave, Paralyte arrived, took credit for saving the town, chased out in disgrace. The interns headed back to Boulderay, one Infinite in tow, but not before Mud was given a prophecy from a local about not being able to run away from his past.
Past
spooky.
Past,
past. After that, Dr. split up the interns to help heal Aleve of her ailments, finding a mix of medicine in the Elder Pine Forest, and her inbreather at the local temple of Daya, who is the deity of the realm. After successfully stabilizing her, the interns headed onto their next mission to find Sleek the Symphonious in the industrious city of Erbloom. Arriving at the city, you all found it in utter chaos. The interns came face to face with their rival, Brink Tussler, dying with a message from the future. Find Brink in the past and work together to stop Sleek from freezing the city in time.
A Brink to the past.
Oh, I like that. They were sent back in time and began working with past Brink in a city besieged by time, including stopping a sword swinging wind elemental, escaping a tyrannical cannibal and a T-Rex, and dealing with a sexy, sexy Aurochs. Who can forget that Aurochs? Eventually, the interns were successfully able to turn back time and take on Sleek the Infinite. But Paralyte reveals herself once more to save the day, steal Sleek's magical loot, mortally wound one of the Brink Tusslers while capturing the other and Sordo. The interns and Sleek escape at the last moment into a magic portal leading to who knows where.
I was just realizing we still haven't found them.
Correct.
Who?
Brink and Sordo.
What they've been doing?
We don't know.
We're going to have to find out.
Oh, well, they were captured. Last we saw, they were, because remember I D's nuts Brink Tussler before I had to say goodbye? Highlight.
Classic.
Wait, okay, Paralyte, you're saying that she saved the day, you know, by stopping Sleek, but it was all like, there was manipulation, stuff like that. What's like the common, okay, so I know that the Infinites are like celebrities, they're like a superhero team, but like what's the commoner's opinion of Paralyte? Is she a supervillain or do they think she's a hero? Or do they know about her?
Well, from what you saw, everyone in Pious Pass seemed really grateful to her for saving the town and was mad at you guys.
Uh-oh.
Interesting.
Yeah, as far as Erbloom, you all departed immediately right when that was resolving. So you didn't get a sense of what the town was feeling at that moment.
She's pulling a syndrome from The Incredibles.
Yeah.
Yeah, causing the problem to solve it herself.
She's bigger. She's better. Great villain.
This is essentially us trying to figure out what this entire story is based off the whole time. Wizard of Oz, Pokemon.
It's Pokemon.
Incredibles.
Which one of you is Flash? Which one of you is Violet?
His name isn't Flash, it's Dash. Get it right.
Oh, Dash. That's right. Can't use an actual superhero
name.
Yeah,
that would just be them infringing on DC Comics.
It's weird. When we originally pitched the show, we came to everybody and said, it's Wizard of Oz meets Pokemon meets The Incredibles.
Yeah. Incredibles.
Yep.
They said, no, we already have Ruby. Stop it.
So all of that leads us to our most recent arc, which we just wrapped up, which kicks off 3 weeks after the incident in Erbloom. The interns and Sleek have been surviving in a frozen tundra. They come upon a wondrous cave belonging to a seemingly long-gone humanoid polar bears, who we find out are called the Ishbjorn. And you all save an archaeologist named Archie from becoming a frozen dwarven popsicle. The interns pick up a mysterious amulet, discover they are in the land of Kaltberg, and follow Archie to one of its villages, Brumafume. Hey, you remember Archie now. Who was that, Chris?
Yeah, I forgot about Archie.
Was that Armando?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did the voice?
The village of Brumafume, like others in the land, seems to be populated by humanoid walrus race called the Valrossians that settled into this tundra some time ago. But after a rescue mission puts them at odds with some ghostly Ishbjorn and possessed Valrossians, the interns find themselves in the ethereal plane and coincidentally encounter a third Infinite, Spectral the Surreptitious. Kyborg had a great escape in that episode from Brumafume, jumping out the window.
Oh, yeah. That was like... I was going to say the highlight was when Brink Tussler tried to like stop us at Herbloom with the guards, and I just started popping off exploding arrows at their feet to make them stop. But yeah, that's the highlight of Stinky Dragon for me. It was jumping out of a window naked.
Total action hero.
Yeah.
Weird. It was the low light for all of us.
Hey. So the interns find Spectral to be bitter and aggrieved from having his Ishbjorn soulmate taken from him. She was Yumi, if you remember. Spectral, a.k.a. Leonard Lank, takes on the plight of the ghostly remnants of the Ishbjorn to wage a vengeful war on the invaders of the land, who are the Valrossians, specifically the Valrossian King, V-King Gjorn, and his people. The interns and Sleek are able to convince Spectral to give them a little time, only one night to talk to the V-King and avoid a war. The interns sneak into the capital of New Valross during a massive festival and are able to meet with the ruler of the Valrossians, V-King Knive Gjorn, a shrimpy boy in position of power, misguided by his evil uncle, V-Head Ward Gjorn. With the help of the local deity, Goddess Andi, and the interns are able to end a century of war and restore peace to the land. V-King Knive offers a ship's passage, and it looks like the interns, Sleek and Spectral, finally find themselves heading back to Boulderay, this time with a mission to infiltrate Paralyte's lair within the Elder Pines and rescue an imprisoned Brink and Sordo. And that brings us up to current times.
There you go. Bum, bum, bum. That's the story.
I was taking notes that whole time because this is a good recap for us to have too. After doing the show already for, you know, was it 6 months now?
Something like 6 months, yeah.
I was trying to type down all the notes. That went by fast, and there's so much detail.
Yeah. And that was just like the 5-10 minute recap, yeah, of all the.
We've done a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can send all that to you guys so that you have those as notes.
Please do.
Nah, no thanks. I'll just re-listen.
the two different people. Yes, please. Absolutely not.
Well, I've been re-listening, so that helps.
Wait, I'd have to go back and listen, but one of the things that I like seeing whenever I listen to the show is who we've cast as the different parts, because Gus performs the parts when we're recording, but then they'll go in and post, and then they'll record someone that works at Rooster Teeth or a friend of the company and then put them in.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the fourth intern, or the Infinite? Because we've already cast them. They were in the Church of Daya, I'm assuming.
Holy Daya.
In the library, you mean?
Yeah.
So it's Jessica as Aleve, me as Sleek, Christian as Spectral, and Jam is Grizzly.
Jam Peralta. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun too. I don't know why I was expecting the way that character's described. I was like, imagine like a big brawler, you know, but like it's a little Jam.
Yeah. And now we try to, in the episodes, we try to credit who the voices are. Typically, when we do like our mid roll read. We'll say who is what. And we also try to incorporate people who interact with us on social media at Stinky Dragon Pod or using hashtag Stinky Dragon Pod. We'll incorporate them as NPCs into the show.
My favorite audience member NPC was when you made one of them a hair pervert in prison.
Oh, yeah.
Hair enthusiast.
Yeah, he just misunderstood.
Yeah.
Hairless Hutch.
Hairless Hutch.
Yeah, that's it.
It's often the perverts that are in prison that are misunderstood.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, don't yuck his yum.
Nothing wrong with Hairless Hutch.
So since we've gone through the recap, it's time for everyone to level up. Everyone currently is level 4, so everyone gets to become level 5 now.
Woo-woo!
Wow!
And everyone gets a horse.
Is that when? That's when things really get a lot better, right? Level 5?
Yeah. As you guys are doing your level up, I'll kind of read through and give an overview of what everyone's getting. That way the audio listeners know. And maybe you'll also find out if you don't know necessarily. But basically, everyone's proficiency goes from +2 to +3.
Wow.
Everyone gets more health. So you roll your hit die and you add it to your pool of added hit die in D&D Beyond. Don't add your constitution modifier. The website takes care of all that. So just add what you rolled. Kyborg now gains the ability to attack twice in one turn.
Yes!
Oh, no.
Plus, I have that other thing. I think it's second wind or something where I can attack for an additional turn. So I could theoretically just kill a boss first round. Here we go.
Well, it depends on your definition of boss.
I don't know. We always have mini bosses, right? Actually, we don't fight much in the show.
I think what you mean is you're going to become a boss.
Yeah.
So FYI, second wind is when you regen health. You're thinking of action surge is what allows you to attack again on your turn.
Yeah. That's what I meant.
I mean, everybody's a boss of someone else. You killed a hamster, so.
That's true.
But he became a boss.
Mud gains access to level 3 spells. Bart, your bardic inspiration is now a D8 instead of a D6.
Nice.
Pretty cool. You also gain level 3 spells. And you have a font of inspiration, so you get back your bardic inspiration on a short rest.
Ooh, okay. And that all happens automatically on D&D Beyond, right?
Yeah.
It's magic.
Only thing you got to choose are your spells.
And also, you got to roll for the HP, right?
Yes. And then finally, Gum-Gum, you also gain the ability to attack twice in one turn. And you gain fast movement, so you get plus 10 feet to your speed when you aren't wearing heavy armor. So Gum-Gum becomes a quick little boy.
Oh. I rolled a 7.
Nice. It's a good roll.
40 HP. Rolled HP.
Add 7 to that rolled HP box.
Okay.
Oh, I gotta go through all these third level spells I've never seen before.
Wow.
Outside of extra attack, is there anything else that I need to do?
10.
No, that's it for you.
Oh, yeah. You rolled a 10, Chris? You really? 10? Right off the bat, huh? Cool.
Do you not see that? Did I not roll it for everyone?
Oh, I didn't see it.
No, I don't see it.
Well, I'll screenshot it.
Well, he's a barbarian, so he has a D12, I believe. So that's not max health.
I'll let this slide then.
There's a spell. There's a third level enchantment spell called Catnap.
Ooh.
What does that do?
You make a calming gesture, and up to 3 willing creatures of your choice that you could see within range fall unconscious for the spell's duration. It's basically like forcing people to take a little nap.
When Gum-Gum gets a little worked up and fussy.
Honestly, using that spell on my fellow adventurers might come in handy from time to time.
I didn't throw it in there, but I believe both Mud and Bart, you can replace a spell with a new one as well if you want to.
From any of the first or second levels?
Yeah. So if there's something like you haven't, or for Bards at least, you can choose one of the Bard spells you know and replace it with another spell from the spell list. So if there's something you haven't been using and you want like to increase your list of spells you can use, you can just swap those out.
I get to swap my spells out whenever I do a long rest.
That's right.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't that an option already? During sleepy time?
For druids.
It depends on, your class, yeah. I think.
So Catnap's pretty cool. I'm reading it. It's like, it basically gives you a short rest after 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Wait, what is this? The Catnap?
Catnap, yeah. So it's like, it lasts for 10 minutes. And basically, the 3 people that fall under Catnap get a short rest.
So it's basically to help your fellow teammates.
Right. Because it has to be 3 willing creatures.
Gotcha.
Outside of the health increase and the extra thing, is there anything else I need to do? Or
for the second time, no, Blaine.
I'm going to do something crazy.
Blaine's just hoping you get something else. I'm sorry, John.
I was just going to say that I'm going to finally put some improvements to my intelligence. Up until now, Mud has been -1 on intelligence rolls.
I've been waiting for that my entire life.
Boom.
It's a funny joke, but also every time Gus has me roll Arcana, because I'm trying to be a good magic user, I'm -1 on Arcana. As well as like anytime it's investigation rolls, I'm -1 on investigation. And it is just terrible every single time.
How are you getting more intelligence?
I have an ability score improvement.
Oh.
Or maybe I don't. Oh, never mind.
At 5th level? No. Yeah.
He's looking at that from level 4.
It's still there for me to change. It's confusing in this thing. So forget that. I'm still bad at magic.
I have Arcane Shot, which gives me Bursting Arrow and Seeking Arrow. I don't use Seeking Arrow, and the last time I did, Gus did not acknowledge it. Can I swap out one of my Arcane Arrows, like what it does?
I will defend Gus and say he did. You just missed.
Oh, called
out. I was about to say, don't throw me under the bus there. I totally acknowledge it, and we played through it.
Is there any other shots that are arrows that I can use, though? Other Arcane?
Yeah, at level 7. Okay.
If you watch the series Hawkeye again, you can get more trick arrows.
Is it one of those things where I made that bed, now I have to sleep in it until level 7?
Yeah, I mean, it's up to Gus, but if you want to go by the rules, you have that locked in until you get like more at level 7.
That's fine. That's fine. I will do that. Then next time I will know the gravity of the thing that I'm doing.
I don't know if I'm going to pick this one. I just need to point it out. There's a spell called Stinking Cloud.
Uh-oh.
And I feel like it would be very appropriate for a show called Tales from the Stinky Dragon. But you basically make a 20-foot radius cloud of yellow nauseating gas that if they fail a constitution saving throw, they spend their turn retching and reeling.
Whoa.
Inside the cloud of poison. Oh my God. That's funny.
So I'll just throw this in there while you guys are looking at spells. There's this wombo combo D&D thing I found on Instagram the other day that I sent to Blaine, where basically there's a spell called Gaseous Form that bards can learn, where basically you could turn Blaine into a cloud of gas, put him in a bottle, and if you guys sneak into somewhere, you just throw that bottle like a smoke screen and suddenly, boom, there's a fighter in front of him.
That's really funny.
It's a Kyborg grenade.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When do I get that spell?
It's a level 3 spell.
Is it? What's it called?
Gaseous Form.
Gaseous Form? Yeah, that Kyborg, he's a real smoke show, huh?
Oh, should I infringe upon Kyborg's realm by adding a third level spell called Flame Arrow to my slot?
Hell no. We could always use more archers. We'll be unstoppable.
Oh, wait. Actually, no. You want this. I touch a quiver containing arrows or bolts, and then when your arrows have... they do 1d6 fire damage. So, no. Now I'm not going to do it because you were nasty.
What is it? Teamwork.
Just because you thought for a second I was going to have it, you said no. So now I'm going to instead do speak with plants so I can finally talk with plants and they can talk back
to me. I was very yes, Andy, supportive of you getting fire arrow.
Yes, Andy. So real fast, because I know Barb was probably still looking for it. Gaseous Form is not available for bards.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, it's for sorcerers, warlocks, wizards, Circle of the Land, Circle of Spores, and alchemists. There's a bard subclass that can take spells from other subclasses. That's what our other classes. That's gotcha. What I was looking at.
Well, did I not mention that I'm a bard sorcerer?
Oh,
it's weird. I have a small detail that I left out.
You could have leveled up your level 5 to be a sorcerer.
Multi-class.
Yeah.
But you could actually do that?
You can do that.
4 levels of bard, 1 level of sorcerer.
Maybe I'll consider that later.
For this one spell.
Yeah, for this one spell, yeah.
But I think it would be a level 3 sorcerer spell.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't gain access. You'd have access to level 3 bard spells, but level 1 sorcerer spells.
Gotcha.
There was another like homebrew D&D thing that I saw on Reddit where some guy was able to like make cows appear. So then he just started dropping cow bombs because they were like, it was something about the Z-axis to where the rules allowed it. So he was just dropping cows on enemies.
Sounds like the movie Twister.
Yeah.
Wait, I think I might be able to do that. Hold on.
But then they die, though, probably. And I don't know if that's in line with your character.
Let the cows hit the floor.
The floor.
Let the cows hit the floor.
It's right. It's a druid thing. It's conjure animals.
Mm, mm-hmm.
I can make a fae spirit appear in the form of beasts, and they appear in an unoccupied space that I can see within range.
Just look at the sun. And
that's funny. There's also another conjuring spell that I was looking at that's summon fae, another fae one, and you summon a fae spirit, but you have to pick the mood. The moods are either fuming, mirthful, or tricksy.
Tricksy.
So I have to pick the mood of my fae if I summon them.
Do you have to have a ring on?
I think you're better off summoning cows.
I like the cow drop spell.
I wonder why they chose cow. Like cow, I guess these are sample creatures. What's the challenge rating of a cow?
Cow's got to be a low challenge rating. So that's why you could do, because you can split to a lot more animals if you go low challenge rating. Like if I found an animal that's 1/4 or lower, I can summon 8 of them.
That's, and a cow is the challenge rating 1/4.
So you can drop 8 cows.
Yeah.
Look at all these chickens.
It's a stampede.
I'm just going to add that to my thing.
It's like 2 quarts of cow, I guess.
Yeah.
Nice. 2 quarts. Jeez.
It's a lot of milk.
Oh, I don't know what to pick. My goodness.
Oh, there's a necromancy spell in here for druids at 3rd level. It's feign death. I touch somebody and I put them in a cataleptic state that is indistinguishable from death.
Wow.
I saw that one too, feign death. Basically, it's like, I don't know if it comes in handy if like one of our party members is like getting their ass beat and it's like, well, now they're dead. Don't attack that person. And they could just kind of...
They're in the fetal position.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just when Gum Gum's being too ruckusy. Just give him a timeout.
Alternatively, other spells, you know, like you're getting, you know, beat up and you know, instead of faking death, you say, call an ambulance, but not for me. And you summon a bunch of cows to rain down on everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got a lot of options.
Yeah.
You don't have to choose spells right now, like immediately in this recording. You guys can like look at them later and choose everything if we want to keep moving on.
I chose my spell.
There's some boss ass third level spells.
What'd you pick?
You say, we got to mobilize.
We got to what?
Mobilize.
What was it, Barbara?
Could I speak now? I chose tongues, which is basically anyone you touch for the duration of the spell can understand any spoken language.
Hmm.
Is that when you have to put on makeup like Kiss?
Nice.
Yeah, the spell grants the creature you touch the ability to understand any spoken language it hears.
So for the record, before it comes up, plants do not have a spoken language.
So you're saying I should choose speak with plants instead.
Yeah. It's what you can do.
Moreover, when the target speaks, any creature that knows at least one language and can hear the target understands what it says.
Yeah. If you do speak with plants, what language are they speaking? Huh?
They don't.
The root of all languages.
Oh, speak with plants does.
That's a different spell, though.
What do their accents sound like?
I'll cast speak with plants and you cast tongues.
Guys, let's not get in the weeds here. Okay.
Stop it.
I have a question.
Yeah.
That shield that was like a hookshot thing, and then sword that I picked up from that one dude. How does that work?
You got to tell me what the dude's name was before I answer that question.
Ward Viking.
Nope.
Ward Viking.
Is that not it?
It's Odom. It's like a hover shield or something.
It had like a gravity pull, basically. So it wasn't like a hook shot came out, but it was still being pulled by like some kind of magical force.
An unseen force.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that made the episode or not, but wasn't something you were saying like you had to become like
attuned?
You know, like operate your operating system. Yeah, attuned or some nerd stuff.
Yeah, it's a thing with magical items that like if they're really powerful and they're meant to be for certain classes or certain races in D&D, then you have to attune yourself and spend time with that object to become able to use it, basically. Or you have to be one of those types of people that can actually use it.
I was going to say, is that like a built-in system so that like you can't just pick up weapons from fallen enemies constantly and use them all the time? Like there's like a...
Yeah, and some magic items in general, just you have to attune to them. It's just like... But it's probably like you said, just so that you're not constantly picking up items and using them. But yeah, Chris, you do have to attune to those. I think we had talked about that before.
Yeah, we got some plans for them.
Yeah, the shield and the sword.
There's also a limit to the number of magic items you can attune to. So that way you don't just have like 30,000 magic items you've picked up by looting every enemy along the way. Limit up to 3.
Chris.
Yeah, Chris.
We need to look through Chris's inventory because he's carrying.
Well, I also noticed in Chris's inventory that like we talked about he had a lot of weight, but a lot of things he has on there don't have weights listed.
Ah, there's like 5 chairs that are listed 0 pounds.
Like what?
Your bottle of rum, chisel, flagon of ale, your leather sack. Nothing that seems super heavy. Yeah,
that's true.
Plesiosaurus teeth.
Yeah.
Quicksand. I'm just looking at the stuff that doesn't have weights. I don't know what some of this stuff is.
Do any of our ability scores change on this level up?
No.
Okay.
Does everyone pick all their spells? Does everyone get ready to move on?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because before we started recording, you all asked so nicely, you're going to level up again.
What?
You're going to go to level 6.
Really?
What's the catch? What's happening here?
No catch. Just it's been a little while since you guys leveled up, so you all are getting 2 levels right now.
I really thought you were going to mess with us.
Just sign on the dotted line.
Yeah, please sign your life away.
Something's happening.
With level 6, you all get even more health. You roll your hit die again, just like you did, and add it into your pool there in D&D Beyond. Gum Gum, you now get 4 rages.
4!
You get bolstering magic, which is a feature from Path of Wild Magic. It can be used a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus per long rest. So you can touch a willing creature, and for 10 minutes, that creature rolls a d3 when making an attack roll or ability check and adds that number. So basically, it's like your own kind of buff, your own bardic inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can roll a d3, and the creature or you regains 1 expended spell slot, the level of which equals the number rolled or lower. And you do that once per long rest.
On with that specific thing, I don't know what a D3 would be.
I was just going to say that. I'm like, there's no D3.
That's what's listed in the manual is a D3.
Yeah, a D3 is you roll a D6 and divide by 2. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah.
Oh, that was the pyramid one.
It's D4.
No, that's a D4.
Yeah, no, I knew that.
Bart, you get an extra third level spell slot.
Woo!
You can swap out spells, but I mean, you just did that. So
yeah.
You also get counter charm. As an action, you can start a performance that lasts until the end of your next turn. During that time, you and any friendly creatures within 30 feet of you have advantage on saving throws against being frightened or charmed. Ooh. Creature must be able to hear you to gain this benefit. The performance ends early if you're incapacitated, silenced, or if you stop it.
Gotcha. And that's automatically added to my character sheet?
I believe so. Yeah, you'll see it as like one of your abilities.
You said counter charm, and I immediately thought of like Bart walking up to a bar and just be like, how are you doing? Putting his elbow down.
Nice. And then the final thing Bart gets is Mantle of Majesty. You gain the ability to cloak yourself in fey magic that makes others want to serve you. As a bonus action, you can cast Command without expending a spell slot, and you take on an appearance of unearthly beauty for 1 minute or until your concentration ends.
So you're saying nothing changes about my character.
Hey!
Wink.
During this time, you can cast Command as a bonus action on each of your turns without expending a spell slot. Any creature charmed by you automatically fails its saving throw against the command you cast with this feature. And you can use it once per long rest. So it's just like you become a charming, commanding person.
Very loquacious.
And I don't use any spell slots for that either. So I could just do that whenever I want?
As a bonus action, once per long rest.
Bonus action. Oh, gotcha.
Command's a good spell.
Yeah. Bart used it, right? In one of the recent episodes.
Suggestion.
Oh, was that suggestion? Oh.
Suggestion, yeah. I have suggestion. And now it's funny. I just spent all that time picking one of the third level spells, and now I have to go through again and be like, now what do I want?
Oh, you don't have to take it. You can just stick with one.
No, I'm going to take.
Did you keep your receipt?
Now, if I picked tongues last time, should I pick speak with plants?
Hey.
All the languages.
Speaking of speaking with plants, Mud gains an extra third level spell slot. Again, you can swap out your spells. And you also get Primal Strike. So starting at 6th level, your attacks in beast form count as magical for the purposes of overcoming resistance and immunity to non-magical attacks and damage. That is very important, and I will have to remember that in future encounters. You all have in the past encountered enemies that have resistance to non-magical attacks. I don't think you all have realized it in the moment at those times, but it has happened in the past. Sometimes when y'all are like, man, this guy can take a ton of damage. Why aren't they dying? Like secretly they're immune to non-magical attacks.
Mm. Oh. My bites are now magical.
I shouldn't say immune. They're resistant to non-magical attacks. Yeah, your claws and your bites are magic. And finally, we've got Kyborg, who gets an ability score improvement.
Or a feat.
Or a feat?
Fate. Fiat? No,
feat's right.
Feat. A feat.
I get a fiat. New car.
Are you going to take a feat?
What's behind door number two?
I'm looking at it and what I could get. I think I could become lucky if I take that as an option. Is that not the case?
Some feats have like prerequisites. I'll look it up for you. Like I think you might have to be a halfling, but I could be wrong.
If I have the opportunity to be lucky.
No, I think anyone can be, you can take it. Yeah, halflings get it by default, but you could be lucky.
I could be lucky. So wait, for one of our party members, I think Bart, you're lucky, right?
Yes, I am lucky. Yep. Yes.
What does that entail exactly? And how
if you roll a one on anything, ability check, anything like that, you could reroll.
You know what, though? I love when I roll ones. It's really funny.
We don't.
But isn't the lucky feat a little different than the halfling lucky?
Yes, I was about to point that out. So the lucky feat is you can reroll a d20 or force a reroll of an attack against you up to 3 times per long rest.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
That is pretty cool.
Something I want to point out real quick that I don't know if you all noticed. Blaine just turned to Barbara and went, Bart, you're lucky, right? And Barbara replied in Bart's voice.
I didn't even realize.
I sure am. Yeah, baby. The trick is that Bart's voice is very similar to mine when I'm stuffed up. And we're not doing any change to ability score on this level either, right?
Correct. Just Kyborg.
All right.
Why is it just Kyborg?
I think as like a fighter, it just happens more frequently because fighters don't get spells or any of that fun stuff.
Man, my HP is so high now.
There's a thing called vampiric exaltation where I could turn the bottom half of my body into just mist and float around. This is awesome.
I don't see that one.
I'm looking at a list of feats on D&D 5th edition wiki, so it might not be there.
You can, yeah, in D&D Beyond, you can, under, I think, game rules, you should see feats to the right. You can click on that and look at like a list of all of them.
Yeah, let's not go crazy with all the extra books.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to have to Google it and search for it every time.
I'm looking up stuff right now, and I might come back to this because there's a lot of good stuff that I want to come through.
All right, fair enough.
Barbara, you mentioned that your HP is really high, and Blaine was asking like what the catch is with, you know, leveling up to level 6. There's no catch, but you are going to have like higher stakes in fights now. Like you'll have creatures that hit harder, or like charm, or like do status effects that like.
No.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that, and this is not like a plug or anything, but the other day we were watching the first episode of The Legend of Vox Machina, and in the first episode, you know, the party encounters a dragon, and I thought that show did a really good job of showing you how a monster of a much higher challenge rating than your party will just tear you apart without breaking a sweat. So it's like, to Ben's point, like as you are progressing, you will start to meet greater and greater challenges. Like I think the dragon they encounter in that show would have been like a challenge rating 23 or 24. Mm-hmm. Where right now you guys, since you're all level 6, you all are challenge rating 6. You know, just to like put it, to like scale it, like what it would be like. Like you all trying to fight a dragon would have gone down like that show, where it would have done a breath attack, looked at you, and then you all would be dead.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
I have a question that maybe you don't want to answer, so feel free to say you can pull the fifth on this, but I feel like our group, compared to our last campaign, hasn't been dying as much.
Don't give them ideas.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that is, but we don't even have a conventional healer on this team. Is there a reason why combat has been going less fatally for us? Is it, one, either my head, you guys either take it easy on us, or two, a lot of us are beefy, and so it's harder to take us down, or we have more sustain. Like, for instance, when Mud turns into an animal, I get like all that bonus HP that's temporary until you knock the animal out of me. And then Gum Gum has rage, and so he has high HP and takes like half damage on a ton of attacks. So what's the answer?
I think Chris was raising his hand. Do you want to answer, Chris?
Well, I think it's a lot of it is this campaign is a lot more story driven and less combat focused.
But even in the combat we do.
I would just say we have less combat.
But he's saying even in the combat we do.
Yeah.
Ben, going around the table here. Ben.
I mean, to answer the question, at least like from my end, like I've straight up told Gus not to pull punches. I think you guys have had a few like lucky rolls with like the heavier fights we've thrown at you. But my philosophy on it is like, yeah, we're story driven. We want to keep your stories focused. And there's like ways around, like if a character dies, how to like pull them back into the story. You know, it might be a thing where then Mike is writing an arc that's all about saving Gum Gum's soul from the depths of hell or whatever. But like, if you die, you die, in my opinion. And we'll find a way around that to like work it into the story and make it a cool story.
Yeah. Thing. I think the characters you're playing, there's more beefy characters who are, you know, armor heavy. Mud and Gum Gum typically take the role of tank and off tank, and Kyborg could also off tank as well. Bart's really the most squishy out of all of you, and he does a good job of like staying in the back and avoiding taking direct damage. If anything, I sometimes pull your punches. Like if I'm gonna like lower the DM screen for a little bit, when you all were fighting V-Head Ward, he should have died like a round or two earlier. But I wanted to move him out to draw you all back out into the main hall.
I think you mean Odom.
Was it Odom? I thought it was Ward.
It was Odom.
Maybe it was Odom. No, you're right. Yeah, it was Odom. I propped him up for like another round or two to move you all to a different room, or to like try to progress the fight or progress the story.
All right.
What I'm hearing is that you want to die more. So I will keep that in consideration.
As John was saying that stuff, I'm like, why are you bringing this up?
Teacher, you didn't give us any homework.
I mean, I think I understood why we're doing well from a, like a damage and HP standpoint. I mean, I don't think I understood at the beginning of this that the druid class that I picked is the druid class that is actually meant to tank. I've made jokes about me tanking stuff, but like reading up more about like Circle of the Moon druids and that kind of thing, I didn't realize I was picking someone who is supposed to get to the front line.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've always thought of like druids as very utility, and so they can be healy, and they can be tanky, and they can be just, you know, a lot of you know, fit the slot kind of thing. But it wasn't until like I realized like the whole like temp HP you get, and as I started, you know, seeing bigger animals and be able to add things like the brown bear and stuff like that, which are just get in there. I'm not going to do a lot of damage, but I will be right next to the thing and I'll probably be taking more damage. I don't think I realized I was doing that.
One other thing I'll say, and this is just from my own perspective as a DM in the past and a writer right now, but like I think there's a misconception that the dungeon master is like your enemy in D&D, and like I don't think of it that way. Like I wrong.
Our DM is Gus, and we know Gus would take delight in killing one of our characters. So
I will say, when we're, you know, rolling initiative in combat, I feel like your enemies are my guys. You know, I'm trying to move them around and you know, have their ability, try to use their abilities as much as I can, you know, to try to take you guys out.
I take it back, everything I just said.
Yeah, I believe that wholeheartedly.
That's why sometimes I'll be like, oh, I rolled bad.
It's less that the players don't think that, you know, they're not like the DM's our enemy, we have to fight against them. But I think specifically Barbara, John, Chris, and Blaine know it's Gus, and Gus is their enemy.
Nah, I'm just Blaine's enemy, that's all.
Yeah, that's true. Also, I found that I didn't realize this. There are guns in D&D, and I could become a gunner and just like full blown Mr. Marksman.
You could be the Scarecrow.
I think that might be in one of the other books or one of the supplemental books.
It says it's available on here, but I also detest firearms, and I like that we live in a little world where we just shoot arrows at each other and spells. Wazoo! Woo.
Pew! I work the Cupid.
Yeah, another very popular DM from like the guy who created the Vox Machina campaign, Matt Mercer, has a homebrew class, I believe, that is all about like gunslinging, and it's like gained popularity in spaces, and that's probably what you're seeing, if I were to guess.
Yeah, I think in a future thing, I would want to become a cowboy, maybe like a gunslinger type, because again, Kyborg was made because of my resentment towards high fantasy. I am a sci-fi guy, so that's why he has a robot arm. So I'm trying to do everything I can to get around this high fantasy BS.
You're pretty fly for a sci-fi guy.
Thanks. Hey. So just for clarity, the gunner is from Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. It's not like in the core book.
You're talking about the artificer?
Yeah, it has a like a notice in D&D Beyond that says this is unofficial material. And it says aren't officially part of the D&D game and aren't permitted in D&D Adventures League events. To use this content, toggle the critical role content in the character builder.
Yep, just like you said.
I feel like it's more important that I get a feat, and like some of these feats have an increase in abilities as well. It's not by two, it's just by one, but like Piercer, for instance, sounds pretty cool. I don't know if I have the option to do that. Basically, like if I get a critical hit, I get a critical hit. Like I get to roll like several dice.
Again, that's from Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. Make sure you're looking in the player's handbook. I don't know how many times I have to say that.
I have a drop down menu.
Apparently, it's not working.
Well, apparently you need to learn how to use it. Okay. Well, while Blaine continues to look through all of the wrong list of feats, I think this might be a good time to get to some Q&A. Right off the bat, we kind of already touched on one. At Mad Irish King says, "What happens if a PC dies?" And I think we, you know, you, Ben kind of talked about that when we were talking about like pulling punches or having to figure out like workarounds in the case that something like that happens.
Basically, yeah, for the first few arcs, like it's hard to die, especially if you're trying to like pull a podcast together, right? Because you want to keep all that story content. But like, you know, want to let you guys get your feet wet with your characters. But like I said, the gloves are off. It's up to just like Gus and however you guys do things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we killed a character in the last campaign.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. That was Judge Bread.
Well, I do remember in the second arc that Bart, I believe, rolled death saving rolls.
Oh.
You rolled what?
Death saving.
Oh, death saving.
Yeah, so you got incapacitated, which means that you start rolling death saving rolls.
I think at one point I did too. Kyborg did.
Yeah. I feel like you did. You have a couple times.
Yeah. Kyborg has.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You hit three of those, you die.
So we've gotten close.
The audience, the fan base, they would have rebelled. They would have been inconsolable if they lost Kyborg.
Yeah, that's a word.
All the Cryborgs.
all right. We got a question from at LyX59. How far along would you say the group is along in the campaign? Are there any other plans for other campaigns after this one? Micah, I think you're probably best suited to answer that one.
I will say, honestly, from the first arc, there was an episode where I was editing it and I had an epiphany for where the whole story should go.
Ooh.
As far as like where, like how, what the world is, what's happening in the world and what could happen. And I just started writing down furiously everything I was thinking of. And so, yeah, we Ben and I had a conversation not too long ago where we started mapping out like how many arcs would this take. And we're probably getting close to halfway through the whole campaign if it goes like to, you know, the timing that we're suspecting. But things could change. But yeah, we have a lot in store.
Yeah, I think after this next arc, you guys will be about halfway. It just kind of depends on how long you take and like,
yeah,
you know, all sorts of stuff. For like general pacing, there's actually like in the Dungeon Master's guidebook, there's like your levels can kind of dictate where you're at in the story. So like levels 1 through 4, you're like local heroes. Levels 5 through 10, you're like heroes of the realm. Levels 11 through 16, you become masters of the realm. And 17 to 20, you're basically like demigods. And so we've kind of like chosen a level we kind of want to end at and then mapped out like how many arcs it would take to get there and like what story beats we want to hit. And like, I think we've mapped out a pretty good story here and I'm real interested to see how you guys react. And, you know, if we have a whole arc where someone dies and we have to save them from, you know, help, but you know, we'll see what happens once a character dies.
Independent of like what happens in our campaign, all this stuff, like I love Kyborg. He's my favorite fictional character that I've made. So like if I ever join someone else's home game or whatever and it's not Stinky Dragon, I'm bringing Kyborg with me.
It's funny, I feel like when people, I don't know, you know, what your background really was with D&D before we started doing all this, but I feel like when people first start playing D&D, they love their first character or two and want to use them as much as possible. Then eventually they reach a point where they're like, I'm sick of playing this class. I want to play anything new or anything weird or anything different other than what I've played for the bulk of the time. Like years ago, back in third edition, I had a rogue arcane archer mm-hmm. that I played for years. So I'm kind of familiar with the arcane archer stuff you're looking through and picking. And looking at it again, like, yeah, I never want to touch that again. Because I played that for like 10 years. Like, I am done with that. So I had another question here from at MoxleySensei117 asking, if there will be another campaign, who would you want to DM next? I'll let the cast answer that one.
Like from this group or just anyone in particular? Like anyone in general?
It's up to you.
We're all going to vote for ourselves. It's going to be like a class president.
I don't think I'd want a DM.
No?
Neither would I.
I just think, like, it's so... I am so constantly blown away by, like, Gus, Ben, and Micah keeping all this stuff, like, tracked and, like, knowing what's happening and what to... Because it's essentially just constant improv based off what we do or don't do. And so that just seems like it would require a lot of brain power, which we record this in the morning, and I don't have that in the morning. But I could see... I feel like Ben could be a good DM.
Mm.
You know?
Seems like he has experience.
But he would have to do it as Sleek.
Oh, God. Actually, so kind of on that note, I was... Once again, I mentioned I wasn't going to be able to be a part of this recording originally because I was out. I was looking at like how to do the recap, and I was like, I could just Gus just read it. Or I could pull Blaine into a room and we could be like Sleek and Kyborg and Sleek is trying to like chronicle the experiences of everybody. But it's just like, oh yeah. So Kyborg, you guys really in this city did this thing that was amazing. Man, I'm so proud to call you my best friend and just let Blaine just like rag on me for the whole recap.
Like Sleek's writing a
ballad.
Memoirs.
A song about the feats.
Yeah.
And I keep wanting to interject rap into it or something.
Barbara said something there about how like everything's constant improv and Micah sent me, was it a TikTok you sent me the other week?
Yeah.
Where it's like a dungeon master trying to explain D&D to someone. And it's like, so let me get this straight. You're telling a story and the main characters are other people who can improv and derail your story at any time. And the whole time you're trying to keep the story moving forward while people are doing everything they can to fight you and take it off the rails. It's like, yes.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, I don't know.
With Chris and I doing Good Morning from Hell, which is just a purely improvisational show, like I think that I would love to do DMing because I think that that's like a lot of character work and that's something that, you know, I think I get a lot of joy out of. John used to run a show called On the Spot, and every week, for whatever reason, I think Chris and I, we just had a season where we would just show up as different people. We never played Chris and Blaine. We're always just like different people.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of fun.
I feel like I could DM, but not for this group. I feel like I would have to have a group of people who follow the rules and just do everything that I expect them to do.
I will say it is very helpful having Ben and Micah, even though, you know, you all are talking to me when we're recording. There's just like constant chat and, you know, exchange of information going back and forth behind the scenes that you all never see. So constantly like double checking facts or rules and like, you know, just making sure everything's going appropriately. So it's like, even though it seems like I'm the one doing all the work, that's like, don't look behind the curtain, like Wizard of Oz style.
There you go.
There it is.
There's really a lot going on behind scenes that you don't see.
Mm. Yeah.
So I have an answer for this question, but I want to get the players through answering it first. But on that note, like every DM is very different. Like if you listen to other shows, like The Adventure Zone is one I've drawn a lot of inspiration when I like pitch this show. Their DM is like, you know, has worked in like, you know, game news for a long time and knows like how games are built. And so like he likes to play at a very different pace and like kind of pull those rules in while still telling a story. I think Gus does a really good job of mixing like playing at a table with stats and getting into the crunchy numbers of everything while also like getting through the story and like trying to let you guys do your improv and do your thing. And I think each of you would have very different DMing styles, which I think is a lot of fun about this game.
What's Jonathan Van Ness up to? Can we get him?
I'll pull some producer strings, see what I can do.
I'd be down with that.
But Chris, John, did you guys have answers?
I mean, I think it would be really fun to DM. I think Blaine would enjoy it a lot too. I think that just thinking from our work on Good Morning from Hell and just telling stories and improv and like that was just fun. My only concern is if I DM, then I would get so immersed in trying to write or like writing the story that I would take up. I could consume myself in that.
It's a real easy thing to do.
Feels,
you know,
I feel like that would be the most disappointing part too, is like if you invested a lot into an NPC and then the characters just completely want to like get away from them or they don't go. Like, yeah. I feel like there's a lot of prep work that goes into D&D. And sometimes it's just like the party gravitates towards the thing that you don't want them to do. While you have like this incredible circus over here built, they'll just like, oh, we want to go back in those woods over there. It's like, no.
Like going in the Glocken Tower and going through all of the encounters that were in there.
Yeah. You had all that stuff playing, you idiots.
I mean, that's art in itself though, right? I mean, like if you're an artist, you have to learn eventually that like you have to have open hands with your own art and not be completely entrenched in it so that like it can have its own life in a sense.
Mm. Yeah. And to be fair, what I meant by that is just where I would want to like, yeah, build out stuff where there's so many, you know, options and things where it would just take up a lot of my time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to me, that like the fun of that kind of stuff is like what I've enjoyed about being just a character is telling a story, but only having to focus on just my character.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Because I do think in terms of story and character, whenever I like approach this game, but I'm only doing it through one lens. So it's fun to do that. I think it'd be really fun to kind of like approach storytelling through like all the NPCs and then like trying to balance it. It's fun, but it's just a lot of work. So good on y'all.
Yeah.
You know who I think would be a really fun dungeon master? A friend of ours who's like an excellent improv artist, Kirk Johnson.
Mm. Oh, wow.
I feel like he'd be really
fun.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
Yeah. Him or like Nick Rutherford.
Yeah. Those can they dual DM?
So yes, please.
Oh,
they're so funny and so quick with just all their improv work, and I think that they would be just like a joy to have in a D&D campaign in any sense.
Yeah,
we just got to get Nick to take a break from Rick and Morty writing to come do our silly D&D campaign.
I'm so jealous. He not only writes; he was a character in the show.
Rick and Morty, yeah.
Was he really?
Yeah, like there is a character called Nick, and it looks like him, and Whoa. He's like one of the main characters of one of the shows, one of the episodes in the most recent season. So jealous.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, like I watch that episode. I was like, that's him. Like, that's Nick.
Oh my God, that is him.
Yeah.
Ew, weird.
It's a good episode too.
I stopped watching, but I might get back on it.
Does anyone else have any thoughts about people they'd like to see DM?
Patrick Stewart.
He's not doing anything, right?
No.
Mm. Picard's got canceled. I don't think it did.
No. It's still gone.
My answer is Barbara. And it's because of something she said in an earlier episode about, you joked about like a Canadian like location and like a Canadian neighborhood. I would actually, so there are other like tabletop role-playing systems that like aren't D&D that are like much simpler and much more role-play oriented, like no combat, but still like keep the story moving. There's one called Kids on Bikes where you just play a bunch of like neighborhood kids and like different, like there's like some like fantasy elements that you can roll into it or like kind of supernatural thing, kind of like Stranger Things or stuff like that. But I can see you running like a short 4-episode campaign we do in between like these heavy D&D campaigns. That's just like you running a story of a bunch of kids in, you know, Canada.
All right, everyone, you wake up. It's negative 25 degrees Celsius outside. Your car is frozen. You have to chip the ice off the windshield.
No, it's either Canada or it's Texas, February of last year.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I did get down to negative 25, but yeah.
And negative 20, regardless. Close enough.
Yeah, but it did get to negative 20 inside people's houses. Inside the house. Yeah. Yeah.
That's negative 13 Fahrenheit for our American listeners. Okay, that's everyone, right?
Yes. And while we were talking, I have decided I will become lucky.
Ooh, I think lucky is a really, really good feat.
It is, yeah.
I have decreed.
I'm going to get so annoyed when you make me reroll now. In the feed. I know that's why you got it. It's when to steal my joy.
Because I still have like a finite amount of luck. I only have the 3 luck points. So that means I can still get my D1s and just fall flat on my face.
I think 3 per long rest is way too many. I think that's OP.
Oh,
I think it should be
shoot. Maybe I should rethink that, because is long rest, is that still going to be a long rest, or is that going to be like when I go into my trance?
Your trance counts as a short rest. Trance. Or as a long rest. Yeah.
Yeah. Long rest. Yeah. It's trance.
I won't abuse it.
It should only be 1 per long rest, but oh well. That's what they decided. I've got a question here from @LemonFishLegs. What is each of your favorite VO for a side character in the story so far? I love the show, and at the moment, no one's died yet. Let's hope that's still true when the Q&A comes out.
Oh, Kayla as the daughter of that cannibal.
Meld.
Yeah, I like that, because I think that we all knew that that was going to be voiced by somebody special, and like Kayla did a great job. She was very sweet.
I really like Hannah's performance as Paralyte. Ooh. It's so creepy. It's so good. Also, Eric as Brink Tussler is fun. Yeah, just because it's like the perfect fit. It's just like, hey, yeah, I'm Brink Tussler. Like, it's just his little rat voice.
He nails it, yeah.
Yeah, those are good.
Yeah, I think Brink Tussler, and then I like Ben Asleek.
There it is. There it is. Fishing for those inspirations.
Inspiration for Chris. Hey.
And then I don't know who else. It was really fun.
James played like a Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, that
character
was so funny, especially because I had no idea that was going to be James, or that it was going to be an Arnold Schwarzenegger character until I listened to it.
I will add on to the Ben is Sleek train, because it is really funny dunking on Chris or Ben or Sleek rather, and knowing that Ben plays him and he will have to voice these responses, and just seeing his little icon just muted, just knowing he's just listening to us.
There are times I want to chime in the recording with just like, oh, Kyborg, my best friend. My favorite so far, I think, has been Christian as Bezler, the goblin salesman. And not just because he has a great voice, but because inadvertently the one time he was the, like, we had the Italian accent going and I had to reach out to him and go, so Christian, you can do the goblin voice, right? He goes, yeah. I went, can you do that with an Italian accent? And he went, I'll try.
That's really funny. I should mention as well, Trevor as Hugh. It was really funny, like, because he told me that you guys reached out to him to voice that character, and in my head I was like, I know that you die. Like, <uh-oh>. I think he did a great job, though. I'm not biased whatsoever.
I like that we knew that he was playing that, so we were all like, oh, you and what's his face have a thing, right? Being obnoxious.
Hugh. Oh, blink blink.
Yeah. That's like probably one of the most fun things about the show, and just being able to listen back adds so much to it for us, is because we can hear our friends and coworkers, mm-hmm. which are mutually exclusive.
We have another question here from @MrMisnomer. What are the Infinites' past achievements? What are they known for? Probably for Micah, yeah.
I would say extinguishing the great forest fire of the Embryoak Woods. I mean, everybody knows that. Settling the dreaded dragon disputes amongst the people of Tetera.
Mm.
And who could forget establishing a rapport with the heathens in the flats of Tabul? I mean, come on, guys. We all know this.
Who could forget? Who
elementary.
Could forget?
They're all stories everyone grew up hearing.
Yeah, it was really cool when they gathered up all the Infinity Stones and got them back to where they were supposed to go.
You mean the Sangria night?
Yeah.
Sounds like a happy hour at a tavern, Sangria night.
Sangria night.
We have a question from at GuySmiley77, great username. What character has evolved the most from where the player originally pictured him? Was it to benefit the team or a personal natural change?
Is that for us to answer or you guys as the game?
Yeah, for you guys.
I have a biased opinion.
Go for it.
I wanted to be a dumb character. Couldn't be a dumb character because someone in this party has to actually do things and proceed us forward. We have anchors and dumb characters galore. So I had to once again be dad and just do things. Like, okay, we're leaving this room.
Don't ignore your past.
I think we all step up into leadership roles from time to time. Like Bart, I would never consider a dumb character.
No, I wasn't including Bart when I was saying that. I wasn't including Bart at all. I want to be very clear. Bart is not one of those
people.
First of
all, John, how dare you call Barbara's character dumb? No, but like, I think we all have directions.
I do a backflip!
We all have characters that, and we have things, directions that we like to take them in. Like, I think Gum Gum is the true dumb character, but he has a pure heart. So, like, those decisions that he makes are, you know, good. And Bart is just mischievous. And then Kyborg is just like, he just wants to show off. And,
stubborn?
Yeah.
I don't think of Bart as mischievous at all. Bart actually exerts the most, other than when he fails at flirting.
Which is rare.
He exerts the most social skills and empathy of the group.
I get a lot of mischief vibes from Bart.
Bart is very, I think he's multifaceted, I think is the point we're trying to get to here. He's a very well-rounded character in every sense of the word.
He is.
Both physically and mentally. And he's sneaky. He's got good stealth, but he's also very charming and very perceptive and, you know, just a all around great guy.
Multifaceted, a real gem, huh?
Real gem.
I guess I'll say to answer the question, and it's not any of us, I would say Brink Tussler had a good like character development because by the end of it, he ended up saving the Infinite Interns. I still hate Eric.
Oh, you're giving him credit.
Never, no. Sleek went from the powerful godlike, you know, force of nature to whatever he is now. So
I like seeing people making like little memes of Sleek before he joined the party and after he joined the party. I see those on social media every now and then. I think they're really funny.
That's funny. I want to see.
But I think that's probably a good point to go ahead and end this episode on. Hopefully everyone enjoyed this. Got like a refresher on the story so far. Got to see what everyone's playing with now when they level up. And we can kick it off with a brand new episode here real soon. Next time we'll have another new episode kicking off the new arc. So thanks for listening, everybody. And you'll hear from us soon.